Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net, for more information. The most amazing thing has happened in my career in radio. First of all, I had someone call in from London, England at the Olympics, and I thought, can I top that? Well, 2 days before the Super Bowl, I have someone calling in from New Orleans, Louisiana at the Super Bowl. So I want to welcome the program. San Francisco 49er, Al Netter. Al, thanks for calling, man.
Yeah, hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to talk to you because it's something I would have never thought when I got into radio so many years ago, 3 years ago, that I would be able to interview someone right before the Super Bowl to take that time. You know, and I know that to schedule an interview with professional athletes, especially with this big day, it's a very, very challenging thing to get someone like that, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's been a busy week so far, but had some free time tonight, so don't mind helping you out and getting on the line here.
Well, I appreciate that very much. You're all over the world. We have radio stations in Canada, Jamaica, the UK. So the whole world's going to hear you tonight, Al. I mean, when it goes out on all syndication, and maybe they'll remember, hopefully, a victory for you guys. Now, the one thing I want to ask is, first of all, tell a little bit about your background. Where did you start? You're a rookie, too. That's the other really interesting part of this. But tell us about how you became a 49er, your career in football really quickly, and then we'll get to the whole craziness of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, definitely. Well, born and raised in Northern California in the Sonoma County, where, people might know it for the wine, right next to Napa. And then out of high school, got a scholarship offer to go play football at Northwestern University out in Evanston, Illinois, about 20 minutes north of Chicago. So, went kind of far from home, but had a great experience out there. Learned a lot and had a great football career. Went to 4 straight bowl games. And, and then about this past season, I was picked up by the San Francisco 49ers. It's been a crazy ride so far. Enjoying the ride and getting better every week. And, here I am today. We've had a great season, and we got one more game to go, Super Bowl.
So what position do you play, Al?
I play offensive line. I play everything from, tackle to guard to center. I can play pretty much everything on the offensive line.
So what an amazing thing. Like, when you played at Northwestern, your team was okay, but to go to this level in 1 year and to now be in this atmosphere, I'm sure it was unbelievable when you first ran out in an NFL team to play NFL football. But now, this event, you must be just blown away from this whole week.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's kind of hard to describe just how amazing this whole experience has been, being here at the Super Bowl. I think we just have a really good team. The kind of players that we have, some of the best players in the NFL. Getting to work with those kind of guys, it's kind of interesting because I'm like, for example, Randy Moss is on my team, a guy that I used to emulate as a little kid outside playing football, and now I'm teammates playing out on the field with him. So just kind of stuff like that. It's kind of surreal. It's kind of hard to actually believe that it's all true, but, I'm living it now.
Well, it sounds like it. I mean, like you said, you have childhood, you're fans of certain players that are on your team. And then I guess to see and to understand the unbelievable legends that are soon in the making with the Ravens as well, you're like, wow, this is just unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Ray Lewis is another guy that, I've been watching ever since I can remember. And now I'm running out on the field with him, against him. So it's pretty amazing, and I feel thankful, and I just am really trying to enjoy and absorb everything in this entire experience, because I know there's a lot of players out there that have been playing for 15, 20 years that never get the opportunity to go to the Super Bowl, And here I am in my rookie season, so it's pretty special.
So let's talk about what Coach said before you flew out to New Orleans, how to handle this craziness, especially when his brother that's coaching in the game had to deal with this with the Chicago Bears. I'm sure he learned a lot from his brother as well, even though it's his younger brother, about the atmosphere and the different things. What kind of advice did he offer you guys so you don't just you can take in this Super Bowl, but yet it's business as usual on Sunday?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, being down here in, you know, New Orleans, Louisiana, there's a lot of room for, you know, players to get out there and make some mistakes because there's a lot of fun things to do. But I think mainly you just said, you know, stay focused, keep your eyes on the prize. We're down here on a business trip. We're down here to win the Super Bowl, to get that ring. And it's not about, like, we can celebrate after we get that win. So, for the most part, you know, it's been purely business down here. We get a little bit of free time to go out and eat on the town, but, you know, we're pretty much all business, and, you know, everyone's just real excited for the game to get out there and go play.
So I guess the advice is, again, we're looking for the prize. Some of you will never get this opportunity again to win the Super Bowl, especially one thing I don't like, Al. I'm in Pittsburgher. You can't tie me, man. You can't tie. The 49ers will be tied with the Steelers in Super Bowls at 6-6. So I'm not going to tell you who I'm rooting for in the game because I'm going to be the journalist. But I know all the Pittsburghers are rooting for Baltimore for one reason, and they can't stand the Ravens. And I'm going to have a Raven on my show next week, and I make sure I won't say that. I had Tom Matty on that used to be an announcer for the Ravens a couple weeks ago, and I mentioned that. I said, come on now, you're on a Pittsburgh show, and you're talking about that. So it's very funny. So I guess the one thing I want to talk about, the whole Super Bowl experience, because one thing you do get to take place, you're practicing, you're doing all these things the week before the game, but media day, especially me being a broadcast journalist, and I guess I wouldn't say I'm a green broadcast journalist, but I always like to learn what these sports announcers and I guess other media people come. Tell me about media day and how crazy that was.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, media day was absolutely nuts. It was like nothing I've ever experienced. Basically, everybody on our team, including the coaches, we all just kind of assemble into the Superdome, and there's about, I would say, at least 2,000 reporters from around the world and newscasters, and they're just, it's a free-for-all, and they put a timer up on the scoreboard for about, I think it was 1 hour, and it's just a free-for-all, and anybody, there's no rules, it's just go and interview as many people as you can. So I think on that day I had about 100 interviews, and just some of them were real goofy, some of them were real serious, some of them were from other countries where I didn't even understand what they were speaking about. So it was a cool experience, but it was a little hectic, and I was pretty glad that it was only an hour long.
Because you guys aren't used to that. You're not used to these long interviews. You're probably saying, this is a lot of fun. He's really getting to know me and talk to me. And that's what I love about talking to celebrities. You know, they have their foundations or charities, or they educate us in specific ways. Now, the question, I guess, the goofiness probably was, so anyone could walk up to you. Could somebody, like, interrupt that other person when they're interviewing? Is it, like, 2 seconds?
There definitely was some of that. But for the most part, people were pretty respectful and would wait till you're done. But immediately, once someone says, all right, thank you, the next person's asking you the next question or filming you. And I think the goofiest one was probably, I think Nickelodeon asked me a few questions, and it was this guy dressed up in some superhero costume asking me some dumb questions. So I don't know. I mean, you get a little bit of everything there.
And I'm sure a lot of the players on the team, you know, from anyone on the team, they couldn't believe the attention they got. You know, Randy Moss is used to tons of people around them. Coach is used to tons of people around him. Certain 49ers are used to this. But you are like, wow, who talks to the offensive lineman, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, usually we only get recognized when we do something bad. So it was pretty cool pretty cool to get some attention, but I think about an hour was enough for me. I was pretty burnt out by the end, but definitely, it doesn't seem like it, but when you're getting asked questions constantly, for an hour, and some of them are difficult questions, it definitely puts strain on your brain.
So it's like speed dating, right? Boom, someone's coming through. Boom, another person. You like, I know, I've never speed dated, and I'm sure you haven't either, but you know how they show that. It's like 2 minutes done, 3 minutes done. Okay, what did I just ask? Didn't someone ask me that question again? And so it must be that. So I guess after media day, because you guys are trying to stay the focus, you constantly, the game plan is just to keep practicing, keep being ready for the Super Bowl, and make sure that New Orleans doesn't distract you, especially the night before the Super Bowl, as we've heard stories of certain cities right before the Super Bowl, Miami for one, with stories of certain players going out and forgetting about the game. So I'm sure the coaches are nervous about that also.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, I think it's just the character of the guys on our team. It's everyone's here on a business trip. We all know what the ultimate goal is, and we'll all celebrate when the time is right. But everyone's focused now, and the coaches are nervous about it, but I think that they're a little bit less nervous because of the kind of guys that we have, and the leadership we got on our team.
Being this matchup, again, you have two coaches that haven't been in the Super Bowl. This, again, shows a different type of game. You're used to seeing the Patriots there every year, or you're used to seeing the Steelers have been there before. So this time, people are going to tune in. I know the Ravens were in the Super Bowl a few years ago, but that's been a long time, and it's a different team exactly, except for Ray. So Ray Lewis is the one keeping them together, and I'm sure Randy is that person for you guys, the veteran that's kind of telling you guys, hey, just keep it as a business group, keep focused, because I'm sure he's showing his leadership because he's been around this before, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. Randy's been huge this postseason, especially leading into the Super Bowl. He's definitely shared his wisdom with us and just told us, he said, I'm going to be focused this week. I'm not leaving my hotel room, and, I'm going to put it all on the line in the game because I really want that ring. So it's been cool to hear from guys like him that have been to the Super Bowl before and know just how special the experience is. And, how much the ring would mean for him to get.
So this is Friday. Tell me that what's happening next. Okay. What's the plan Saturday? Cause we're getting very close to the Super Bowl. How do you guys keep, focused in practice? Is it the same type of a Sunday routine right before the game, like Saturday walkthrough type of thing?
Yeah, definitely. I think, the most important thing is the coaches have been stressing to us is that, let's keep it as normal as possible. It's the same football game that we've been playing. So we have our normal routine leading up to a game. So we'll have our normal meetings and walkthroughs tomorrow as if we were just playing a normal regular season Sunday game.
And do you guys have curfew on, or do they do that in the NFL for Saturday night?
Yeah, we've had curfew every night since Tuesday. So it's just most guys are in bed way before the curfew anyways, but it's just a way to check us to make sure that, we're for sure, not out on the streets doing anything stupid.
See, I remember these days, especially when I was a college basketball player, but also as a professional wrestler, and I was rooming with guys. Do you guys all have your same room, your own room together, or is it by yourself? You don't room with people on the road?
Actually, yeah. Most of the veterans have their own rooms, but the rookies we're teamed up with the same guys that we usually room with on the road.
Oh, so who's your roommate on the road?
His name is Kenny Wiggins. He's another young offensive lineman. He played at Fresno State.
Oh, cool. So, again, you're telling Kenny, I got another interview, the big audience tonight to talk to me and all that. And it's very interesting. But I think that the whole thing about this is it's this camaraderie, the road, the understanding, and to be there and to understand this. But are you going to imagine, have you imagined this in your career when you were playing college football about running out into the Super Bowl? Did you ever think you were going to do this?
Not really. It's kind of something that, it's kind of something you kind of have in the back of your mind, but it's just, I feel like it's all step by step. You know, when I was in high school, I didn't know that, you know, I worked very hard, and my goal was to make it to a college team, and I got that. And then when I went through college, my goal was to make it to the NFL, and now I'm here. And then my goal is to, you know, eventually get, my goal was eventually to get into the Super Bowl, and now I'm here. So it's just kind of just step by step, everything's, you know, gone right for me.
And then the off season, and then another season, the whole thing. So you're hoping that this is slow-mo, right? That day, it's a slow-mo going through, so you don't blink and it's over.
Exactly. Like I said, just trying to absorb it all and, you know, take advantage of it and make the most of this amazing opportunity.
So, okay, so I guess what I'm going to offer you is this. If you win the Super Bowl, or you don't, you have to come back on the show to tell us about the experience of that day, and especially what happened, how you felt, all the different things. And if you do win it, it's going to be something where you're going to talk about getting the plane ride home and how crazy San Francisco will be and all these different things. Now, Al, I guess slowly but surely, even though I'm a huge Steeler fan, because of you, I'm going to be very torn watching on Sunday. And the honest truth is that it's very hard. I was a 49er fan at certain times growing up just because of just how amazing the team was with Joe Montana and the history of it. So it's going to be an interesting game to watch, and a lot of fun, and hopefully a very exciting game. And we're going to welcome you back regardless to tell us about the experience of the Super Bowl. So are you involved in any like charities or foundations or anything else you're trying to promote right now, Al?
No, not at the moment, but I would definitely, love to come back on the show. And yeah, I definitely love to share my experiences of us getting that Super Bowl win, and I'll let you know all about the experience coming back and the parade and everything.
Oh, see, I like hearing that, and I'm going to say I didn't hear that, Al. Okay, that I'll play this after the Super Bowl. Okay, because I'm not gonna go ahead. I'm not gonna say I got the someone predicted. The win. Hey. I won't do that, Al. You're not Joe Namath now.
Hey, you know, I know. Hey, you gotta be confident, man. Yeah. You gotta be positive and confident.
But you know how Al it is. It's like people that say, I predict a win of this. I'm a historian of Super Bowls and how that was the biggest thing in the world. And I'm sure people have said it constantly. Well, we're going to win this. But I wish you all the luck in the world. Have a blast. So where can we find information on you? You saw I tweeted you out. So you have a Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a Facebook as well? Do you have a website or just Twitter and Facebook?
As of right now, I just have Facebook and Twitter, and I'm more active on my Twitter. But yeah, people can follow me. It's just at Al Netter, Alnetter. That's my handle.
And is it the ultimate? What is your ultimate goal in your career? What do you want to accomplish in your career? This is the last question before I let you go. What is your ultimate goal as an offensive lineman? What do you want to accomplish before you retire?
I think first and foremost, win a Super Bowl, and I think the opportunity is right here. And I mean, it's pretty amazing. It's only my rookie season we'll have to, who knows, in a few days, we may have to make a new set of goals after we win, so.
Well, hopefully you have a great Super Bowl, and I wish you all the luck in the world. And I'll be pulling for you, especially in watching to say, hey, I interviewed someone in the Super Bowl. And that's an honor for myself as a broadcast journalist to have that opportunity. So thanks again for taking the time to call me, Al. And we will be in touch, and we'll set up another interview with your agent to make sure we get one after the Super Bowl, kind of to give us through the process. I'll watch and research so I come up with some great questions for you to tell about the experience and everything of that coming up to the day. So thanks again for calling.
All right. Thank you. No problem.
All right. Take care, Al. Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
All right. You're listening to Total Education Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Wow, I really am excited to talk to this celebrity because she has a very interesting group she's working with. And anytime I see a celebrity or athlete who's trying to help others, they have a forum on my show. So I want to welcome the program, celebrity Cassie Jordan. Cassie, thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to talk to you, but for our audience, I know that you did have a role that people would remember you from, especially for the famed Office. So tell a little bit about your background and then what you're doing to help children.
Well, let's see. I've been acting since I was 6 years old.
Okay.
And that's usually that people ask. They're like, how long have you been acting? And I said, well, the first thing I got cast in, I was 6 years old. And they're like, oh, wow. And it was a school play when I got bit by the theater bug. And it was called Free to Be You and Me. And I played Atalanta, who's the girl who runs a race against her suitors and her father so she can win her independence so she doesn't have to marry anybody.
Very interesting. So starting early, so being in the business so early, that makes it, does it make it easier now by being starting so young?
Is it making me easier?
Yeah.
I don't think it makes it easier. I think it puts it in perspective that it's not a sprint, it's a race.
Yes.
And sometimes people are ahead and sometimes there are people behind, but you can't, you have to run a race with yourself as opposed to comparing your relationship or your relationship with your job or your goals with anybody else. I mean, everybody's got their own time to be successful and everybody's got their own path to go. So you have to just keep your own self in perspective and what you do well and what is satisfying to you and your soul.
Yes. So by doing that, you understand the business earlier and it makes you take it in a different perspective than somebody just broke in.
Yes. I would rather run a long, long race than have a short, explosive career.
Gotcha. You want to be a paid actor for a long time to come. Not, well, I made a living for about 2 years, but then I was typecast and I never could get another job again.
Correct.
So after you started as a child actor, what kind of got you involved in wanting to be a comedian? Because that's interesting. You started in acting and then led to being a comedian, or always did you always think you were part of that?
I'm sorry. Ask me that again.
The comedian part. How did you start?
Oh. Yeah. I've always been funny, I think. I mean, my mother said I came out of the womb with funny. My mother says a funny egg and a funny sperm got together and made a funny zygote, and she gave birth to a funny baby.
So,
because everybody...
Good.
Everyone in my family either sells insurance or is a teacher, and they're all very dry. And then there's the black sheep that's me.
The moved out to Hollywood and left the family and said and did something that is a career that is, I guess, every day is it's a roller coaster ride, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But I'm fortunate enough to have a family that has backed me up every step of the way and made it easier. And I wish everyone had that kind of parent who would say, you know, you have to have some sort of skill, you have to have some sort of degree in something college-wise, but once you do that, I'll support you, because life is too short not to live your dream.
Exactly. It's too
life shouldn't be like a total drudge and a total grind.
Right. Exactly. And it's to be something you're passionate about. And it seems like, Cassie, you are definitely passionate about that. And I guess for another time, I'd love to interview you on specifically, I guess, how After Child Actor got involved in the comedian, your whole career. But today we're kind of talking about, and I wanted just to get a little bit of background, about what you're doing for children. So you're taking the role that I'm sure when they heard that you were helping out in the SAG reading program, they're saying, I'm sure your relatives are saying, okay, now you're getting involved in education, right?
Yes. When I was about 7 or 8 years old, my aunt took me to the library to get my driver's library card, and it opened such a world to me because it was like I was handed a little bitty airline ticket or a little bitty books-wise, and it opened up a whole new world of places to go and things you could be and things you could do and places I've never been to. So when I got into the Screen Actors Guild, which I'm a very proud union member, go union, they have a program called Book Pals. And it is a wonderful program where you are assigned to a classroom for a year and you bring in books to read to the kids. And these are inner-city kids who usually have one parent or two parents that work a lot, and they are like in aftercare. And their parents don't have a time to read. And they've shown in studies that children that are read to, it stimulates the brain core, it stimulates their creativity, it stimulates so much of their thinking processes that it makes them better people, it makes them... better people.
Yes, yes, definitely. And I guess I never knew there was a program like that. And Cassie, we'll have to stay in touch, especially to kind of connect with SAG and talk to other people that are involved, other actors and actresses are involved in this. Because again, I'm a former teacher, own a tutoring consulting company. That's how the radio show started. And it was really mostly education based. And I've kind of gone in a lot of directions since then and to talking to celebrities. But I think that what you're doing is a fantastic thing because they just don't have somebody who's willing to help them, to spend the time with them. A lot of kids that when I taught in the inner city, that the parents were working all the time. They never had the time to sit down and work with their kids.
And the TV is the almighty babysitter, but the TV talks, it doesn't talk back.
Yes.
It stimulates, but it doesn't ask questions, and the TV isn't interactive.
Correct.
It's just one-sided. It's like a drug. I understand, I mean, I don't have any children, but I have friends who have children, and sometimes you just need them to watch Barney for an hour while you can decompress. I got no problem with that.
Well, I know. I have four kids, 7, and the others are under the age of 3. So I have a crazy life.
So they're like, yes, please go watch the Doodle Box.
Oh, yes.
Give mommy a minute.
You got it. Give daddy a minute, especially when he's trying to take care, because my wife's a kindergarten teacher, so she spent during the week, so I'm really constantly taking on a lot of the roles working from home now. Before, as a teacher, we both had that responsibility. We're exhausted. We come home. I would tutor all night, come home, and it was crazy, but it's been much easier having that entrepreneurial role. But you're right. It's so easy to say, go in front of the television. But the problem is, unless it's not, and a lot of times it's not educational, and a lot of times these kids just, their vocabulary is so limited, and they really don't understand how to develop the love for reading, right?
And it affects their self-esteem because someone is choosing to give them the box, not a piece of them.
Right.
And I have such memories of my mother reading to me and reading me Paddington and reading me Eloise.
Yes.
And now when I go to the library, I pick out those books. I want some Dr. Seuss. I want some Eloise. I want some Francis the Badger. I want certain things that have meaning to them and have morals to them and have a story that the kids will relate to.
Absolutely.
And they cut you no slack, because I've got 30 of them in a room.
Oh, wow.
And I have to hold the book out, read the page to me, and then I have to show one side of the room, and then I have to show the other side of the room, and then I have to turn the page. And sometimes I pick one of the little children to come turn the page for me, especially if it's their birthday or because I'm there every week. And if I, like, just read a page and then turn the page, they call me on it. They're like, we did not see the picture. Excuse me. You start on that side of the room. You went left to right twice. Can you go right to left once for us? Kids are very, very honest. They will keep you honest and they will keep you grounded, because if you're not doing the right voice and they don't like it, they will tell you.
Oh, they will.
That doesn't sound like a badger. And I went, well, what do you think? And then we have a conversation. Well, what do you think a badger would sound like if a badger could talk? What do you mean badgers can't talk? Well, we don't know. I don't speak badger. Do badgers talk? I don't know.
So is it like the hecklers out there? You know what I mean? As a comedian, they're the worst critic.
I can handle. At least they're not cursing at me and personally insulting me. They're just saying that my badger voice for Francis the Badger doesn't sound like what they think a badger sounds like.
Do you notice how much...
And they're entitled to their opinion.
Do you notice how much they're starving for learning? That's what made me so passionate working with inner-city kids.
Their little faces light up and their eyes shine, and you know they're just getting it.
Yeah. It's so different than teaching the affluent, because I've taught both. And I see absolutely, once you give them, open up the world to them, they're just so interested in learning.
Yes. And now a lot of them have asked their teacher, they're like, can we put in the library on our free time? We want our own book. It's a gift. It's like a little plane ticket, because you've got this whole, it's like being handed your own little world.
Exactly.
That you can go into and you can read as fast or slow as you want.
So right. It's so unbelievable. And I guess, do you go to different schools all the time? I mean, do you go to different libraries, or do you stick with the same
kids? No, you have to go. You go through a training program, and then you have to have a inoculations to make sure that you can go into the schools. And they run a background check and a criminal check on me, which I'm totally fine with. And then I'm assigned a teacher. I talk to the teacher, and then I'm assigned a classroom for the year. So the kids have something that is consistent in their life.
That's great.
Same time, Monday through Friday, because a lot of them have a lot of chaos in their life. So that was one point about giving them one thing they can count on stability-wise.
That's tremendous. Do you stay with the same school every year? How long have you been with the program?
I've been with the program 2 years.
Are there a lot of celebrities involved from SAG involved in this?
Yes, there are a lot of them, but they don't really, like, they talk about it in SAG, but they don't, like, use it as, like, a platform. Like, hey, look at me, I'm so great, and I'm, like, donating my time. No, but yes, many of them. Morgan Freeman does it.
Oh, wow.
Issa Morales does it. My brain is falling apart.
That's okay.
Laura Linney does it in New York. A lot of people do it. Or they will videotape it if they're somewhere. They'll read the book and they'll Skype it in, or they'll videotape it and send it to the classroom. Yes.
And it's something that you like, that really just makes you feel good that you're able to help others, and especially who truly need it.
Started out that I wanted to give so much of myself to, like, I mean, actors can get very selfish and very self-centered and just wallow in their own selfness.
Yes.
Over and over and over, and just twirl and just wallow and wallow. And that's not healthy for anybody, and it's not using your creative juices to share your gift.
Right.
So I remember going to one of the panels and then talking about the SAG Book Palace, and I said, ooh. So I called Robin Roy, and I went in for an interview, and she goes, you will get more from these kids than you will ever give them.
Yes.
And I didn't really understand what she said until I went. Because if I go and I'm having a bad day, or I had a crappy audition, or somebody cut me off in traffic and gave me and not nice gesture. Then I go to this classroom with all this energy of these 7 and 8 year olds who are just so full of hope and promise and energy and love. And they're running up to me and rubbing their, I mean, granted, I'm not supposed to hug them, but if they want to hug me, that's great. It's this weird rule. With
yes, I know all that being a teacher.
Personal touching and whatnot. But they all run up to me and they're like, Miss Kathy, we waited all week for you. What'd you bring us? And I'll ask them now. I was like, do you want to read something that's seasonal? Do you want a Halloween book? Do you want to hear about Easter? Do you want it? And I'll bring a Passover book or Yom Kippur. And I'll ask the teacher what, I'll talk to my teacher and ask her what her curriculum is so I can go to the library and I'll say, do you want me to supplement what you're teaching in class? Are you learning that about pilgrims or Lewis and Clark? And she goes, sometimes she does and sometimes she doesn't. And sometimes I'll just bring out the feast and read other places you'll go. And they love that.
So here's a question, Cassie. Do people recognize you at all, the kids? Have they ever seen you on TV?
Yes, but not from the office. These are 7 and 8 year olds. I don't think they would get the office. They would probably go, I think people are all angry and grumpy. One of them recognized me from Big Time Rush. And one of them recognized me from, Sunny with a Chance.
Oh, wow.
Still on. And one of them, Big Time Rush is the one about the band. Yeah. I did a couple of episodes of Big Time Rush, and they're like, hey, did I really sing? And they had all these questions on it. Yes, they really sing. Yes, they're really nice. Yes, they play on their instruments. No, that's really not their house. That's a movie set that somebody built. No, I can't take you there. And I believe that you should not lie to a child unless it's absolutely necessary. You can kind of tell a little white fibby to kids, but they tend to smell it out of you.
Yes.
It's like, that's not true. That's what you said last week. What? And they'll call you on it like that. They will not let you get away with anything. So the kids keep me honest. They're amazing. And I walk out of there feeling so elated and full of purpose and that the world is good and that...
That's great.
Full of hope. That's the word. Regardless of how cruddy my day has been, after that hour with those children, I'm full of hope.
That's fantastic. Cassie, what's... I'm sorry.
I just think everybody should give more than they receive.
Yes.
I mean, there's so many kids, there's so many programs that you could go to a school and read to an hour or get involved in an aftercare after school and read to kids or read at your local library or read at your local church or your synagogue or wherever you wish to go. Kids are a future, and there's so many of them that are just being plopped in front of the TV or handed a video game or an iBox or I don't know what they're called, iPad, and they're just playing video games, and they're not having any stimulation with another person, and they have no social skills, and they're very introverted.
Yes.
And it's our fault.
Yeah,
being selfish with our time.
Absolutely.
It's our fault.
Well, Cassie, you're doing a tremendous thing with the SAG reading program. And is there a website to find out information, or is that just more just telling about what you're doing?
If you go to www.sag.bookhouse.org, or if you go to SAG, just www.sag.com, and scroll through opportunities or resources, or you can... it's also on Facebook. You can like Facebook. I'm sorry, you can like on Facebook. It's SAG Book Pals.
What's your latest?
Bookpals. Sorry, that's okay.
I wanted to ask what's going on with your latest projects. Anything to promote right now?
Well, the most interesting thing I did on Monday is I took my dog, Sophie Ann, who is a Morkie, who I also adopted from a rescue program. Do not buy puppies, people. There's every kind of dog rescue in the world of every kind of breed that all need a home. Don't buy puppies. And she had a Green Giant commercial audition. I took my dog to a commercial audition. And when I walked in the room, it turned out to be not just an audition on light camera with an assistant. It was a producer session. There were eight of them in the room. So it's eight of them, a camera guy, me, and my little dog. And a guy on this, in the, a guy who was playing the host. It was like man on the street. Hey, does your dog do any stupid pet tricks? So I had to on the spot, and I gave Sophie tricks to do, and she did them all, and she was brilliant.
That's great. Any projects for yourself? Other things going on with you?
Things are crazy right now. I'm auditioning for many plays and TV and movies. There's just so many things down the pipe, and a lot of them I can't talk about.
I'm sure you can. I know you couldn't. And
I'm really, really busy, but people have gotten, because of the internet,
yeah,
and because of social media, you have to sign confidentiality agreements.
Yeah, I had Mary.
I've done two things where they've come through the pipe, and they're like, they'll be in January, February, and you cannot tell anyone. Not social media. You can't Twitter it. You can't put it on Facebook. Nothing. And I'm like, and they're very serious about it, because there's that one girl who let the cat out of the bag about Glee on who is going to be prom king or prom queen. That woman is burned in this town.
Oh, jeez. You know what's
funny? She's burned the Ryan Murphy Bridge.
I asked these questions, like Mary Ammons from Real Housewives of D.C. was on my show, and she told me about her possibility for a pilot for another reality show. But I said, can we say it? Oh, yeah, yeah. And then you get other people that kind of spill their dirt, and like, you can't put that on there. Okay. So I'm learning a lot about Hollywood, and it's a lot of fun. And it's just like when I was in the wrestling biz, completely the same. We got to watch, you know, the relationships, but yet also we got to watch what we say, especially because it'll end up everywhere. So, Cassie, where can we find information on you? I really enjoyed the conversation. I'm sorry that we were almost not able to connect, but I appreciate you taking the time. Where can we find more information on yourself and what you do?
You can go to, I'm on IMDb under Cassie Jordan. My personal website is www.realaccess.com/talent/Cassie Jordan. I'm on YouTube. I'm on Facebook. I'm everywhere. I'm spread all over. Okay, that didn't sound right.
That's fine, and we'll definitely think of that. But, Cassie, thanks again. I appreciate you calling, and I'd love to have you back on in a couple months again to give us an update of what's going on with your dog and also your projects you can finally tell us about. And definitely want to follow up with the whole SAG thing and see how my listeners can help at one point in time and maybe even find other schools that would love to be part of the program. So thanks again for calling.
You're one. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And let me talk on your radio. And I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Cassie. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
All right. You're listening to Total Education Celebrity Show. And we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Well, this guest is somebody that has a very interesting career and interesting relationships. And we could talk for hours, but we don't have time for hours, but that's why we're going to have monthly segments. So I want to welcome the program, Joan Benedict Steiger. Joan, how are you?
I'm just fabulous. I'm great every day.
Well, that's fantastic. And I came up with a topic, and you're going to say, well, what are you thinking about, Neil? But what I wanted to talk about, I guess, is your relationship of having two working actors in the same house and how the everyday situation worked and how specifically living in that kind of a relationship. Think about it, Joan, about how many Hollywood actors are married and how their relationships don't last long because you're both in the business. But you guys were able to do something a little bit different. So kind of explain that to our audience.
Well, first of all, Rod and I met in the late 50s when I was just starting out as an actress in New York. And he was doing his Broadway show, Rashomon, on Broadway. and also appearing on guesting on television shows. Well, I guested, actually, I was a regular on a TV show called Masquerade. And Masquerade had visiting celebrities who would do skits, and the audience was to guess who the celebrity was because he was in kind of a masked attire. So to make a long story short, he was, I believe, Rod LaRock. I was Theda Bara, two Silent Day movie stars. And I remember we were in the makeup room, and he said, come here, little girl. And as I said, he was appearing concurrently on Broadway in Rashomon, so he invited me to dinner and to see the show. We saw the show, and that was the start of a great romance. I remember we were crossing Broadway, and coming out of the theater, I looked up at this big marquee, and there it was, Rod Steiger starring in Al Capone. And, of course, I was a kid. I was so impressed. I said, oh, my God, how does it feel starring on Broadway and starring in films? He said, great, kid. So we had this wonderful, wonderful romance, and a lot of people don't know it. Rod was a wonderful poet. He used to read poetry to me all the time, besides being this fabulous, sexy man. So we had a great courtship for on and off for a couple of years when he would come back into town and so forth. Well, time passed by. I met someone else, and I was married. And about after my first husband passed away, John Myers, who was also a Broadway star, and I got this call. And I was in Hollywood, had been a widow for about 4 years. And he said, Joan Benedict? I said, yes. This is Rod Steiger. Well, I really fell off the chair. I said, Rod, how did you find me after all these years? He said, Joan, I'm Rod Steiger. Anyway, we got together, and of course, we're married, and we started working together again. I made two films with him. And when we weren't working together, we were together every single day. Now, to somebody, that might sound strange, but we just had fun all the time. We adored each other. We traveled all over the world, in every country with him, and he was a fabulous art enthusiast and a painter himself. So I think I've been in every museum all over the world, and he was a great, he used to call himself, not a gourmet, he said, I'm a gourmand. He loved food, which unfortunately was the cause of his demise. And so our life was just so thrilling and exciting. As I said, we did the two films together, Month of Sundays and The Flying Dutchman, but that title was changed. I'm not sure the title, what the current name is. But when we weren't working together, or he was working, he insisted that I be with him on the set. And it was kind of embarrassing because here he was, Rod Steiger, Academy Award winner. After each take, he would call across the set, how was that, Joni?
Now, I have a question. Again, I remember when I worked with my wife, okay? She was a kindergarten teacher, and I was across the hall, the fourth grade teacher. And and I'm sure it's the same thing in a movie a lot of times. You're together, you know, at certain times of the day when you're working, because I know I found out from working with actors now, man, you guys have long hours when you're shooting films. So you saw each other at different times. And that's amazing. You still always were together, never apart. Did the people kind of see that as kind of strange?
No, I don't know whether they did or not. It's just we were having the time of our lives.
That's fantastic.
he was just so interesting, and I guess he found qualities in me that were interesting. You see, the problem with people I find getting married is, aside from all the great passion, if you don't have anything in common with the other person or great things to talk about, you don't have a marriage. And we just had everything to talk about. And, of course, my passion has always been for actors. I love everybody in the entertainment business. I just find them much more interesting. With no offense to businessmen, but I'm just not attracted to business and that kind of thing. I love to spend the money. But the only way I can explain it, and I was married to my first husband, John Myers, who was a star on Broadway, Sound of Music, and many, many of the Broadway shows, and we were together every day. So the men that I've been with wanted me with them, and I wanted to be with them. And strangely enough, everyone said, oh, my God, you know, John's a ladies' man, Rod is a ladies' man. And those were the guys that were the truest to me.
So let me. I want to talk about when you're talking about the whole situation of being an entertainer.
Yes.
And how I was an entertainer, Joan, in a different atmosphere. I was a professional wrestler for 9 years and then kind of left the entertainment field. I was a minor league, never made it to the big time. I was always on stage. Okay. And before that, I was a quiet person, and wrestling completely changed my whole persona in so many ways. Well, then I went into teaching and kind of stayed away from it for so long. Now I'm back into entertainment, and I cannot see myself ever going back again, meaning it's just when you talk about a business person, I consider I'm business, but the interesting part that makes me just passionate every day is entertaining others and learning from others. It's so important.
That's it. The thing is, when people say, oh, aren't you going on a vacation? I said, oh, God, when I'm not working.
You want to be quiet.
Working is my vacation. I love it so much. I love the theater. I've done over 40 plays. And interestingly enough, Rod, having done Broadway, was never comfortable doing Broadway.
Really?
He was a film actor, and he was just entranced by my theater work. A lot of actors are, it takes a different kind of courage to do the theater. And
the reason is because you and I, Joan, and I, wrestling, we couldn't take another take. When we're alive in the ring, guess what? You can't you can't say, okay, take one, let's get out of there. You know, because we had to perform, and we didn't know if the fans were going to come and beat us up. We didn't know who was going to throw something at us, who's going to be a heckler. But when you're
that's it. You know, it's one take. But not taking anything away from film. Acting is
difficult.
Very difficult. I'm never quite. I never have been comfortable. I'm comfortable in front of a still camera, but with technical things, I'm not comfortable. So.
I agree. And what I would do is, like, it's something where I see this when we're on stage. Guess what? It's all about the audience reaction to be successful. That's not on
if you just can't take away the instant audience reaction of doing a play, it is to be out there. Of course, your audience would be more vocal, but with me, to not hear anything, to hear complete silence and feel the audience just memorized and enthralled, and it's a good play, and you're good.
Yeah, we're dead for it.
It's just an incredible feeling. And then, of course, you have afterwards, unlike movies, you have to wait like a year or a few months to get reaction, but this is the instant reaction afterwards, and meeting people afterwards. The theater is just very exciting.
You're dead. In wrestling, if you don't have an audience reaction, if it's silent, like,
yeah,
guess what? You've not done your job.
Yeah,
and when I was a bad guy, Joan, I had to have everyone in that building, if it was 100 people or 10,000 people, hate me, or I didn't do my job. And I would go out the first second, and I had to get people mad at me. And then it just led from there. I think you remember Jerry the King Lawler that was in the one movie, The Man on the involving the, what's his name, that was the actor from Taxi and stuff. That basically he taught me so much about theatrical and how to get people to not, how much of a performance it is. So I guess, so what you were saying with Rod is basically Rod liked the fact of more scripted. Would you agree where it's more, I guess, position?
No, scripting, no. Now, here's the thing about Rod Steiger. Rod Steiger rewrote everything he ever acted in.
Oh, wow.
And I think that was a big key to his acting. Now, he never strayed from the thought or anything like that, or the theme, but he rewrote words and sentences to fit his delivery, and I think that was a big, big plus for him. Of course, being Rod Steiger, he could do that. Not every actor can do that.
No, not every actor can do it, and it's
but he had a magic with the camera. If he was on camera, that's who you're looking at. He was just such an exciting actor. You know, the first film he did was on the waterfront.
Oh, wow.
Believe it or not. And he was nominated for an Academy Award, with Marlon.
So you're a fan of entertainment, and sounds like it, Joan, and I, we went from a relationship of being always together, but it just gets me so interested. When your memoir comes out, Joan, how's that going, working on it?
Oh, it's going fine. The thing is, I've got so much. I've got so much to say, so it isn't a question of a lack of what to say. I've got so much, and the job is to get it all together, but I'm excited about it.
What I need to do is, once your memoir's out, our monthly segment will be so easy, because I'll pick three lines and say, let's talk about it, Joan, for 15 minutes, and I'll learn so much from you. And it's so interesting how, I guess, I have the Hollywood bug. I'm going to be out in LA in March for an event for something, and I just then I said to myself, you know, Pittsburgh's become like the mini LA. So I might have to go and get some roles. I'm, like I said, I'm 6'10". I need to get a role and
How tall are you?
6'10", 280. Yeah, I'm
6'10". Oh, my gosh.
Yes. So,
you're a giant.
Yes, exactly. And that's where I have the opportunity. I want to get into some movies. I've been in TV. I have a TV show. I have radio. I want movies. So we'll have to keep talking.
You know who I was? I made appearances with Palm Beach Film Festival. He just passed away, the big black fellow in the Green Mile. I can't think of his name.
Oh, yeah. I forget his name, too, but yeah.
Yeah, he was. He was so sweet. I think he was about that height.
Yeah, he was, and he did a brilliant job as an actor. And The Rock, that when he was in wrestling, before he became a big movie star, I knew him well too. So
he was a wrestler also.
Yeah, he was a wrestler. The Rock was a wrestler.
See.
Yeah. So he.
Yeah, I have a picture with him. Yeah, he was very, very sweet. Well, I really enjoyed our talk.
Yeah, thank you, Joan. Where can we find information really quickly? Because I know you got to go somewhere. Like,
yeah.
I have another interview pretty soon.
Okay.
What's your website?
It's Joan Benedict Steiger at mac.com. Or JoanBenedictSteiger.com.
Well, Joan, I always enjoy this, and you're educating us in so many ways of the when movies were movies. And I look forward to talking more about Rod's career next month. So
wonderful.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, you're listening to Total Education Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.